The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is the brilliant young military analyst of the Jerusalem Post, Yaakov Katz. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Hanukkah's over now, the great and long Festival of Lights, but I would be remiss if I did not note that this year some of the best Hanukkah material actually came out during the last days of the 8-day holiday, and just a little too late to make last week's Two Jewish show. So, just as the smell of fried latkes lingers in our homes for long after the final candles of Hanukkah burned out, so too the Hanukkah shtick carries forward towards our end of the secular year. And since this is a season for best of lists, here are our top candidates for new Hanukkah songs of 5771, humorous category. This year's nominees in the best Hanukkah routine include the inimitable Jon Stewart and his counterpoint, the equally brilliant Stephen Colbert, singing about the contrast between Christmas and Hanukkah in Can I Interest You in Hanukkah? It's pretty wonderful.
Can I interest you in Hanukkah? Maybe something in a festival of lights. It's a sensible alternative to Christmas. And it lasts for seven. For you? Eight.
Hanukkah, huh? I've never really thought about it.
Well, you could do worse.
Is it merry?
It's kind of merry.
Is it cheery?
It's got some cheer.
Is it jolly?
Look, I wouldn't know from jolly, but it's not my least unfavorite time of year.
When's it start?
On the 25th.
Of December?
Kislev.
Which is when exactly?
I will check.
Are there presents?
Yes, indeed, 8 days of presents, which means one nice one, then a week of dread.
Does Hanukkah commemorate events profound and holy? A king who came to save the world?
No, oil that burned quite slowly.
Well, it sounds fantastic.
There's more! We have latkes.
What are they?
Potato pancakes. We have dreidels.
What are they?
Wooden tops. We have candles.
What are they?
They are candles! And when we light them, oh, the fun, it never stops. What do you say, Stephen? You want to give Hanukkah a try?
I'm trying to see me as a Jew. I'm trying even harder. But I believe in Jesus Christ, so it's a real non-starter.
I can't interest you in Hanukkah. Just a little bit.
No thanks, I'll pass. I'll keep Jesus, you keep your potato pancakes. But I hope that you enjoy them on behalf of all the goyim.
Be sure to tell the pontiff, my people say good yontif.
That's exactly what I'll do.
Happy holidays, you too.
I I especially like the lines in that song about, I'll keep Jesus, you keep your potato pancakes, but I hope that you enjoy them on behalf of all the goyim. And John Stewart's rejoinder, be sure to tell the pontiff, my people say, good yontif. Truly inspired. Our second nominee in this post-Hanukkah shtickfest, and my absolutely favorite cut of the year, is a parody of the Tayo Cruz Dynamite song by a new Yale Jewish a cappella group called the Maccabeats, and their virally popular cut. It was viewed by 2.5 million people last week, including my entire family about four times at my insistence.
I'll tell a tale, 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 tale. Yeah, oh, Maccabees in Israel, L, L, L. Yeah, when the Greeks tried to assail, sail, sail, sail. Yeah, but it was all to no avail, veil, veil, veil. Yeah, yeah, the war went on and on and on. Until the mighty Greeks were gone. Yeah.
I put my latkes in the air sometimes, saying ayo, spin the dreidel. Just wanna celebrate for all 8 nights, singing ayo, light the candle. We say I'll have me sing, oh yeah, for all 8 nights.
Their rivals thought, are they for real, 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 real? Those Maccabees, they never yield, 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 yield. They charged ahead with sword and shield, 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 shield. Yeah, yeah, the war went on and on and on. Until the mighty Greeks were gone. Yeah.
I put my latkes in the air sometimes, saying ayo, spin the dreidel. Wanna celebrate for all late nights, singing ayo, light the candle. We sing my old tune, oh yeah, for all late nights. Then we play dreidel by the candlelight. And I told you once, now I told you twice.
There is something irresistible about a takeoff that is actually better than the original song, especially when it has more intelligent lyrics and better harmonies. Our final entrant is not actually a Hanukkah song, but why restrict our holiday season musical work on Too Jewish to just Hanukkah? After all, there are other important festivals this time of year. You know, Kwanzaa, New Year's, and one other festival whose name I sometimes can't quite remember. What is it again? Well, the third nominee in our funniest end-of-the-year routine is a takeoff on a Mariah Carey Christmas song, All I Want for Christmas Is You. This you also have to hear. Trust me on this one. Be patient. It's well worth the wait.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own. Ever know, make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas is Jews. Yeah, I won't ask for much this Christmas.
Menorah lights are shining.
That's not the best behavior. That's okay, he rolled again 3 days later. Now I'm an empty dater. I don't want a lot for Christmas. Gentile boys are such a bore.
I'm not saying there's any truth to the rumor that Jews run the world. We certainly don't. But we do kind of have Hollywood. Just ask Mel Gibson. And so our winner is, well, all of us who have had the happy opportunity to celebrate our Jewish identity in this wonderfully open and religiously free country with its preposterously talented popular culture. On a more serious note, the brilliant military analyst, the Jerusalem Post, Yaakov Katz, is here with us this morning. Find out the inside story and what the real challenges are for the Israeli military in today's Middle East, and what the dangers and opportunities are both on the battlefield and any potential ones. All that when we return in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft, and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina of Mama's Pizza. I'm feeling lazy today and don't feel like writing a commercial. Instead, I'm going to read a letter we got the other day. Dear Mamas, thanks so much for your help recently when my car died outside your restaurant. But most important, thank you for the years of awesome service. You proved the difference between a good business and a great business is the people who run it. When I first walked into Mama's in 1982, I knew Mama and Pop were special. We used to chat while Mama made the pizza sauce and Pop told stories about pretty much everything. As we've gotten to know the rest of the family, I know Mama and Pop would be so proud of their legacy. Families like yours are hard to find, and we feel like we're a part of it. Thank you. Signed, Alex, Tracy, and Lexi. Well, guys, you are part of our family. And thanks for reminding us that it really is the family in our family business that's made Mama's what it is today. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza!
Whether a hurricane that renders thousands homeless or the death of a child, disasters great and small challenge the faith of the most devout and fuel the arguments of the bitterest cynic. No one has spoken to the challenge of maintaining faith, purpose, and meaning better than Rabbi Harold Kushner, author of the best-selling book on the problem of evil, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. Temple Emmanuel is proud to invite everyone to hear Rabbi Kushner in a special program on Wednesday, December 15th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at Temple Emmanuel by calling 327-4501. One of the most popular and important speakers in the world today, Rabbi Harold Kushner speaks to the heart of what it means to be human and how we can overcome adversity to flourish in all circumstances. Rabbi Kushner's new book, Conquering Fear, Living Boldly in an Uncertain World, has received rave reviews. For those who wish to become sponsors of this important event, there's a dinner before his talk by reservation only. Hear world-famous speaker and writer, Rabbi Harold Kushner, author of the book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road, on Wednesday night, December 15th at 7:30 p.m. Call 327-4501 for tickets or for more information.
We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish this morning Yaakov Katz. He's the military correspondent and defense analyst for the Jerusalem Post, Israel's leading English language daily, And he's also the Israel correspondent for the London-based Jane's Defense Weekly, which is the, I think, most important popular publication on military affairs in the world. He spent January of 2009 with the Israel Defense Forces along Israel's border with the Gaza Strip, leading the paper's coverage of Israel's war against Hamas. Did that make you an embedded journalist?
To some extent, yes.
In July and August of 2006, he covered Israel's war against Hezbollah for the Jerusalem Post and USA Today. He's also covered settler affairs for the Post, was chief correspondent during the Gaza Strip disengagement in 2005, and he is currently writing a book called Israel versus Iran, scheduled to be published in the spring. Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you.
You know, this is an interesting time to be a military analyst for Israel. Israel had had such a spectacular military reputation for so long. Now they're coming off, you could see it this way, two consecutive wars that didn't achieve the objectives people thought they would have. Or you could see it as, you know, they're on an 0-for-2 streak in their last two wars. What does this mean?
I would argue that that's not necessarily the case, but I'll try to explain. First of all, there's no doubt that Israel once perceived to be invincible by its neighbors, right? 1967, Six-Day War, 73, 37 years ago, Israel was in surprise attack by Egypt and Syria, lost a lot of territory, but then regained it all and continued to be possibly the more powerful country in that region. But with that said, if we look at the past 4 years, since the Lebanon War of 2006, Israel has enjoyed unprecedented quiet along its northern border, something it never had before. These have been the four quietest years of Israel's existence along that northern border. If we look at Operation Cast Lead, yes, Hamas is still there. They're more powerful than they were back in January of 2009. Today they have rockets that can hit Tel Aviv. Then they didn't have rockets that could hit Tel Aviv. But the past almost 2 years since the launching of that operation have also created a new security reality along Israel's southern border.
You know, we will go into this much more in depth later in the show, but just sort of briefly, it sounds to me as though what Israel has done is purchase, in a way, a little bit more peace, a little bit more of a sense of security. Is it also a false sense of security?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I think that Israel ultimately enjoys security to some extent, but as you rightly point out, Hezbollah is not going anywhere. Hamas isn't going anywhere. They're rearming. Their objective to destroy the Jewish state still stands, right? They haven't taken that off their agenda.
Yeah.
And therefore, they very well could attack Israel again, and Israel could find itself at war. I think that what this sense of quiet, though, does allow you is diplomatic maneuverability, to the sense that, so you hit Hamas hard, you hit Hezbollah hard, and you create quiet for some period of time, a year, 2 years, in the case of Lebanon, 4 years, and you hope that that window of opportunity that you've required, something else, some other maybe diplomatic or political process, can fill the void and can change the reality forever. Because military, ultimately, from an Israeli perspective, these military, and this is kind of building on Clausewitz and his theories, the famous military theorist, is that military is just another, is to create the better conditions for the political action, the diplomacy that will take place later. I think that that's where Israel is at the moment.
We will talk much more with Yaakov Katz on the rather fascinating subject of Israel's military situation and the military situation in the whole of the Middle East, and definitely talk about Iran when we come back on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson, and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Would you like to make a difference in this world without costing yourself anything? The Mitzvah Corps of Temple Emmanuel helps people in need with their mortgages and utilities and other emergencies of life. We've helped many people stay in their own homes and keep afloat long enough to get back on their feet. The Mitzvah Corps has virtually no administrative overhead and no long processing for those in emergency situations. Your state tax credit donation of $200 per individual or $400 per family costs you nothing. The Mitzvah Corps is a state tax credit 501c3 philanthropy, and your contribution is deductible right off your state tax bill and can also be used as a federal tax deduction. Consult your tax professional with any questions.
You can help the Mitzvah Corps help people in our community by sending your donation, check or credit card, of $200 per individual or $400 per family to the Mitzvah Corps, care of Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road, Tucson, Arizona, 85716, or call 520-327-4501 for more information.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us from there or at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. I heard a new definition of the word chutzpah this week. The classic definition of chutzpah is the tale of the guy who kills his parents and throws himself on the mercy of the court because he's now an orphan. But I like this next one, too. A little old lady sells pretzels on a street corner for 25 cents apiece. Every day, a guy leaves his office building at lunchtime, and as he passes the pretzel lady, he leaves her a quarter. But he never takes a pretzel. This goes on for 3 years. The two of them actually never speak. Then one day, as the young man passes the old lady's stand, leaving his quarter as usual, the pretzel lady says, "Hey, they're 50 cents now." Chutzpah, of course, is an especially Jewish emotion, or at least it has always seemed so to me. In fact, it's probably been an essential Jewish expression, for without chutzpah, we would never have survived 2,000 years of statelessness and maniacal persecution. Easygoing people who don't push in where others think they don't belong don't survive the Holocaust or defeat overwhelming enemy armies or even retain their identity in a season when everything is designed to cater to a different faith and tradition. Chutzpah is what makes it possible for a tiny people, less than 1% of the world's population, to produce world beaters in so many, many areas of human accomplishment. Chutzpah is what, in part, motivates a young guy like Mark Zuckerberg to drive Facebook into an entity with 500 million members. 500 million. And what drove Bob Dylan to remake popular music and Albert Einstein to reimagine the universe and remake the world. It's what motivates Jewish hyperachievers now and always has. There's a downside, of course, to chutzpah. It can make Jewish groups of people less than tolerant of error and occasionally, well, slightly critical of others and even of themselves. But without chutzpah, we would be exactly nowhere. So here's to chutzpah at 25 cents, 50 cents for orphans and even for rabbis. Well, a little more chutzpah. Here's a final Hanukkah shtick, our top 10 list of the best Beatles Hanukkah songs. Number 10, She Loves Jews, yeah, yeah, yeah. Number 9, I Get By With Little Geld From My Friends. Number 8, I Wanna Hold Your Dreidel. Number 7, All You Need Is Geld. Number 6, 8 Days to Eat. Number 5, She's Got Some Presents to Hide. Number 5, I'm Just a Jealous Goy. Number 3, We're Salt and Pepper's Lonely Latke Band. Number 2, Hey Jews. And of course, the number 1 popular Beatles Hanukkah song of all time, Happiness is a Warm Latke. That was our final post-Hanukkah shtick of the year, the top 10 Beatles Hanukkah songs of all time. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm well. You've just come back from a conference of Shlichim. Shlichim, of course, are what you are, a representative of Israel abroad. There's a major change in the philosophical orientation of the whole program, but tell us about this experience.
Yes, I've been to a conference with another 144 emissaries, Shlichim, from all across the U.S. and Canada. All of those Shlichim are part of the Jewish Agency program of Shlichim. And the Jewish Agency have made a huge shift or change in its focus. While in past years, the focus of the Jewish Agency was on convincing people or Jewish people to do Aliyah, to move to live in Israel, to immigrate to Israel, the shift now is to focus on Jewish identity and to try and inspire as many as possible Jewish people to be connected to their Jewish identity through a strong connection with Israel. So that's a very big change and a shift in mind from what previously was the focus of the Jewish agency for the last 62 years, 63 years at least.
That's really revolutionary. I mean, look, the whole of Zionism, the idea was to get Jews to move to Israel, which of course so many have done over the century and, I don't know, 20 or 30 years since the Zionist movement was founded, 20 years maybe. But still, the idea that it's okay to be a Jew and not live in Israel, and that is an organization like Jewish Agency, which was really founded for that principle to get people to go there, this is significant.
From the beginning of the Zionism, there was always a contribution on this point. Echad Ha'am, one of the leaders of the Zionist movement, always claimed that the main focus of Israel is to become kind of a center, a spiritual center for the Jewish people. And in a way, what we see today across the United States and Canada is that people are shifting away from their Jewish identity. And we found that the connection with Israel is the strongest bonding to keep people, keep their Jewish life and be connected to their Jewish inheritance. And that's the focus. Yeah.
Very interesting. Guy, thank you, and we'll keep following this. Talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Weiler of Janos, the J-Bar, and Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
The holiday season is nearly upon us, well upon us, actually. Great time for parties, great time for gift certificates.
Yes, it is. So when you're thinking about gift certificates, we have gift certificates to Janos, J-Bar, Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. We also have private party space at all of the restaurants. So if you're doing holiday entertaining, we've got several private party spaces available at Janos and J-Bar. And we're going to be doing our private parties downtown, upstairs in Terry Etherton's gallery. Gorgeous space.
Beautiful spaces, great food, great gifts, great parties. What's the number to call?
Call us at 615-6100. Then you can go to any of the restaurants or go online at janos.com.
JANOS.com, best way to do it. See you there. Thanks, Janos.
Happy holidays, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Attention Arizona taxpayers! You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime by directing your tax dollars to the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, formerly known as CHEDER. Here's how. The State of Arizona Private School Tax Credit allows Arizona taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations, allowing scholarships for children in kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at the Tucson Hebrew Academy and the Jewish Community Center. If you make your donation today, you'll get 100% of your money back on your Arizona state income tax. A tax credit is not a deduction. Rather, it's money that comes directly back to you in your state tax return. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, please call 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. The deadline to take your tax credit is December 31st, so call or sign up online now.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Story broke not too long ago. They're opening up some old archives on how many Nazis were led into the United States and how they got in. Some, of course, were chased and caught and convicted, but a lot of them, the CIA was involved in letting them in because they had some perceived value to the United States. This isn't exactly news. In other words, people have talked about it, but I don't think anybody understood quite how widespread and consistent the policy was. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. I think the Justice Department for many years has had a sort of ambivalent position vis-a-vis the question of Nazi hunting, vis-a-vis its own role in basically breaking the law or bending the law in order to admit certain people after the war. Because there were laws about not admitting communists, Nazis, war criminals, all sorts of categories of people. But generally speaking, if somebody could play the national interest card or the national security card and say, it was overwhelmingly in our interest to parole this guy in because X, we overlooked the fact that he or she was a communist or a war criminal or a Nazi or whatever was in their past that should have disqualified them from entry. And I think we did this fairly systematically. And, you know, like all sorts of other things that are coming out now about the 40s and 50s with medical experiments and government testing certain poisons on the mentally handicapped or people of other race, minority races. I mean, the government basically was far more paternalistic and kind of all-knowing and we can do whatever we want in the 40s and 50s. I think it was a lot less accountable. And I think it was that way because it was riding on a crest of patriotism that followed the war when, you know, basically the government won the war, made the U.S. a superpower, and now could do whatever it wanted. So in terms of our evolution as a society, I think, you know, the pendulum may have possibly swung almost too far the other way in terms of watchdog groups and everything is subject to intense scrutiny and everybody, every Tom, Dick, and Harry knows better than the government, and they're not willing to cut the government any slack. And, you know, that may be too far in the other direction, but I think there's a golden mean somewhere between those two extremes that we have not yet found.
You know, I think about Wernher von Braun, you know, maybe one of the most famous Nazis, the guy who started their whole rocket program, brought over here. You know, he should have been an arch enemy. He sent the V2 rockets crashing into London on a regular basis. And yet he became a celebrated scientist and helped the United States rocket program. And that was kosher. Somehow he was washed in the American flag or something, among many others. So it's an interesting problem because when does national interest and sort of common morality, when do those just come into conflict? Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. As the El Al plane settled down at Ben-Gurion Airport in Israel, the voice of the captain came on. Please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened until this plane is at a complete standstill and the seatbelt signs have been turned off. To those of you standing in the aisle, struggling to pull Hanukkah presents out of the overhead compartments, we wish you a happy Hanukkah. To those of you who have remained politely in your seats, Merry Christmas! More chutzpah. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we complete the story of Joseph and of his great father Jacob, now known mostly as Israel, with the final Torah portion of the book of Genesis, Vayechi. It begins with a description of the death of Jacob, and perhaps even more importantly, the final blessings that Jacob gives to his many troubling sons. But one of the most interesting aspects of this section is a brief episode in which Joseph, who knows his father is dying, brings his own two sons, Jacob's grandsons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to him for a blessing. In keeping with an ongoing theme in Genesis, Jacob blesses the younger son Ephraim before the older son Manasseh. When Joseph tries to correct his father, Jacob assures him this blessing order is intentional. Both boys will father great tribes, but the younger will exceed the older in accomplishment. You know, we still use this blessing every Friday night when we bless our own sons today, both in temple and at home.
In the Bible, we always expect the older child to succeed at a greater level than the younger, to receive a certain bonus for being firstborn. But repeatedly throughout Genesis, the younger child is the one who ends up excelling the older, receiving a greater portion of the inheritance and the attention. It's as if there is a clear message here. God has a plan that goes beyond the conventions of our human society. As Paul Simon once sang, God only knows, God makes his plan, the information unavailable to the mortal man. Perhaps the more powerful meaning is that we each have the ability to shape our own destinies. Like Ephraim, or like Joseph himself, or his own father Jacob, we may be born into less favor and fortune than others, but we can make our own way to success and goodness, and to God, if we work and care and seek holiness. When we come back on Too Jewish in a few moments, Yaakov Katz, the outstanding military analyst for the Jerusalem Post, will tell us just how dangerous Iran really is to the world and how it should be handled.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Under interrogation by police, a 14-year-old boy admitted to starting the worst forest fire in Israel's history, the Haifa and Carmel forest fire. The boy told police he went into the forest in the Carmel region of northern Israel to smoke a hookah pipe, which he lit with a piece of burning coal. No word on what exactly he was smoking in that hookah. When the boy finished smoking, he tossed the coal into the woods, which quickly set the dry brush ablaze. He ran back to his school, but did not report the fire. That Carmel fire killed 41 people, ravaging thousands of acres, and threatened the port city of Haifa. Approximately 17,000 residents of Haifa were evacuated from their homes. Firefighters from Israel and countries from around the world battled and eventually defeated the blaze. Philanthropist Carl Shapiro and his family will return $625 million they made in investments with Bernie Madoff. Shapiro, the Boston area philanthropist who was among one of the biggest winners in the Madoff scam, you know, in every one of these scams, there's winners and lots of losers. Shapiro gave heavily to Jewish causes after Madoff made him a billionaire. He has maintained he was unaware that he was investing in a Ponzi scheme. And in a move termed by one leading critic an act of anti-Semitism that may cause the medical community to deny organ transplants to Orthodox Jews, the central body of modern Orthodox rabbis in the U.S. is backing away from using brain death as the indicator of death. The move is significant because vital organs can be transplanted from people declared brain dead, but they are not viable if doctors have to wait for the heart and breathing to stop. By no longer recognizing brain death as a definition of death, the Rabbinical Council of America is jeopardizing the lives of Orthodox Jews in the U.S. who may be denied organ transplants by the medical community, according to Rabbi Herschel Billet, a former president of the RCA. This is a serious problem. It means that Orthodox Jews are prepared to take organs from people as a result of brain death, but we're not prepared to give organs, said Rabbi Billet, who is a spiritual leader of a young Israel in Long Island. The 110-page study recently distributed by the RCA to its 1,000 members was prepared by a committee of seven rabbis over the last 4 years. It does not take an explicit position on which definition of death to accept, but it does move away from the position of accepting brain death. This has the potential to be a great disaster in the area of organ donation with the Orthodox community. We can only hope that they revisit this idea and come back to their original position. And in sad news, Stephen Solars, the globe-trotting U.S. congressman who exposed Imelda Marcos's notorious shoe stash and passionately supported India long before it was popular in Washington, died at the age of 70. Solars, a Democrat who served 9 terms representing New York in Congress, died in Washington after a battle with esophageal cancer. Despite being a Democrat, he helped spearhead President George W. Bush's bid in 1991, that's the senior Bush, to win Congress's authorization for the first Gulf War. Israel never had a better, more energetic, or more effective friend in Congress than Stephen Solars. Zecher Tzadik Livracha. May his memory be a blessing. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Yaakov Katz, the military correspondent, defense analyst for the Jerusalem Post, and the Israel correspondent for the London-based Jane's Defense Weekly. He has had a very rich and deep experience with the Israel Defense Forces, covered Israel's border with the Gaza Strip in 2009, led the paper's coverage of Israel's war against Hamas for the Post, and covered as well Israel's war against Hezbollah in 2006 in the summer campaign there. He has covered settler affairs and was chief correspondent during the Gaza Strip disengagement. You spent a lot of time dealing with Gaza, haven't you? I'm currently writing a book called Israel versus Iran, coming out this coming spring. Originally from Chicago, he made Aliyah to Israel 17 years ago and served, I believe, in the Armored Corps, in the Tank Corps?
Yes.
In the IDF. Currently lives in Jerusalem and has 2 daughters and a law degree from Bar-Ilan University. Which one was more difficult to acquire?
The daughters.
Iran has been at the top of Israel's agenda militarily for a while. Yes, you know, Hamas. Yes, Hezbollah. But neither of them, I think, in the Israeli analysis present real survival issues for Israel, where if Iran has nuclear power and it's run by Ahmadinejad or just a generally Islamist regime, there's a great fear. Is that a fair analysis?
I think so. I think if you look at Hamas, they don't have the capability to cross into Israel and conquer a Israeli town or small village in the south.
Let alone be a real existential
threat. Right. Hezbollah doesn't have that capability in the north. They're not existential threats. What they are is they retain the capability and the ability to terrorize your people, but with their tens of thousands of rockets and to cause lots of destruction. Iran, on the other hand, is an existential threat. And Iran, it stands at the front at the moment of Israel's agenda when it comes to its dealings with the world and trying to get tougher diplomacy, tougher sanctions to be imposed on Iran to that they should suspend their enrichment of uranium and stop their pursuit of a nuclear weapon. Because what ultimately will happen, in my analysis, is that what we're facing is, why is it an existential threat, you could ask. I don't think it's that they would necessarily tomorrow launch a nuclear missile off into Tel Aviv, but that risk exists. There's also the possibility of nuclear terrorism, passing it off to one of their proxies. They are the greatest state sponsor of terrorism in the world today, and they support and direct Hamas and Hezbollah. But there's also the unprecedented nuclear arms race they would set off. All these other countries today within the Middle East, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Turkey, others that are pursuing now a nuclear capability, turning a volatile region already into more of a nightmare. And that's what's extremely concerning for the state of Israel today.
You know, Israel has had a very, maybe not so quiet, but primarily quiet deterrence factor with its nuclear power, which has been true since Shimon Peres ran the program for Ben Gurion, and they came up with sort of the policy of ambiguity. I'd love the phrase policy of ambiguity. It's served Israel extremely well. Is part of it just a sense that they're going to lose that deterrence?
Well, I think that if we look at Israel's nuclear program, it's purported to have quite the nuclear arsenal. But Israel,
1,000 warheads,
hundreds at least. But Israel's nuclear capability has never caused other countries to pursue that capability. And that's what's most interesting. And I think that that's why it comes down to the question, ultimately, of intention. If you look at the one country that did pursue the capability was Iraq. But Iraq did it because they were fighting an eight-year-long war with Iran.
As
a matter of fact, the first country to attack OC Rock, that reactor that Israel eventually destroyed in 1981, was Iran, right, which just didn't get it done. So Israel then went in to do it. Since Iran has really made its major progress with its nuclear program, we've seen Syria. We now see Egypt conducting nuclear research. Jordan and the King Abdullah recently announced that they're beginning to possibly establish a nuclear energy program. The Sunni states, they're genuinely terrified with what will happen. Also Saudi Arabia, with what will happen if the Shiites, their greatest adversary, goes nuclear and makes no secret of its desire to spread the revolution throughout the region and to other countries. And Israel's intention, I think, as you mentioned, Shimon Peres, has always been, like he said, Israel's nuclear program has been so Israel can make peace, not so it can make war. And you could look and you could say to yourself, Israel was at war with Egypt for years until 1979. Why didn't they make a nuclear bomb? Egypt was at war with Jordan until the 90s, and they didn't do it. Lebanon and Syria didn't do it for all those years. And that's because I think they all genuinely understood that Israel was not doing it to threaten anyone, that Israel's true intention ultimately has been what it's been trying to do, is to make peace throughout the region.
It's a very interesting insight into some of the complex psychology within the Arab world. Of course, the Sunni-Shiite split, but also the people that Israel has been dealing with primarily, you know, the enemies were really secular regimes. They may be Islamic, but they're Islamic secular regimes, and they're secularizing regimes compared to the Islamist regimes. This is the first time, really, where it's a real Islamist regime that's the existential threat. And I don't think most Americans understand the distinction. You know, all Muslims are the same. Well, not so much. How close is Iran? You know, nobody knows exactly, supposedly, but somebody does. How close is Iran really to having a nuclear bomb?
Well, I think it's two interesting points. First of all, you take a look at Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, who's believed to be a follower of the Mahdi, the hidden imam, a child, essentially, who at the age of five in the 9th century went into hiding and never to have been seen since, and is believed by his followers, like Ahmadinejad, to return to this world after a period of cosmic chaos and bloodshed. I think what at least I would call the apocalypse, right? And yeah, with the pursuit of that capability, the nuclear capability, could be that that's what he wants to usher in the Mahdi's return. And he speaks openly about that. So you're dealing with that regime that has that very dangerous side to it, with because of its ideology and its beliefs. And they're pursuing the capability to carry out essentially what Ahmadinejad says, which is to wipe Israel off the map. So you have to take them seriously. Now, currently, they're at the point where they have 2.8 tons of low-enriched uranium. That's LEU. What's significant about 2.8 tons, this comes from, not from me, but from the IAEA, the UN's nuclear watchdog based in Vienna. 2.8 tons is what is the amount that you require to extract from it 75 kilograms of HEU, high-enriched uranium, which is the amount you need for 3 nuclear weapons. With that said, that's just the fissionable material. What's my delivery system? How do I get my nuclear weapon to where I want it to go? And we're all witness, almost monthly, to new ballistic missile tests that Iran does. They have the Shihab 1, 2, and 3. They have the Sajil 1 and 2. They have now the Simorgh, which is possibly going to become their first ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile. Their missiles can already encompass 6 European Union countries, including Bulgaria, Greece, Romania, Hungary.
Maybe even, right.
So they have all the components already required for a nuclear weapon. The question is, when will they go to the breakout stage? When will they decide that the time is to begin to enrich the uranium to higher levels? Because at Natanz, which is their main enrichment facility, it's under IAEA supervision, and the world can see that they're not doing that yet. And the Israeli assessment at the moment is they are looking to get their hands on a much larger stockpile, 6 to 8 tons of low-enriched uranium, which will allow them one day to create an arsenal, and they're going to wait for the opportunity when the world is weak and the world is not united, like they are today with increasing sanctions. And when they take that opportunity that they see they can gain the most at the lowest price, international sanctions, they'll go for it. And that's where Israel's assessment right now is on Iran.
Are they really afraid of the international sanctions? Are they really concerned?
You know, Iran could be looked at from two different directions. On the one hand, you could say that Iran is very simple. They're bent on destroying Israel. They're willing to pay any price in their pursuit of that. The other hand, you could look at Iran and say, look, it really is this complicated, convoluted regime. But Israel still has argued for years that if you really want to hurt Iran, you really want to get them to rethink their current course of action, you got to hit the energy sector. And we know that Iran has loads of oil. They're the 4th or 5th largest exporter. but they can't turn that oil into the gas they require for to drive their own cars, right? They import about 40 to 50% of gasoline for cooking gas and for gas for cars. If you were to cut off that supply of refined oil, right, gas to Iran, you would have a major impact on the Iranian economy. And we're not seeing that yet. And you heard it by the State Department ahead of the June Security Council resolution that we want sanctions that will hurt the regime but won't hurt the average Iranian. And I understand that, because why should the average Iranian, this is a country with 70 million people, why should they be impacted in an adverse way because of what the regime is doing? On the other hand, I argue differently, is that, so you want Israel to attack because that will have dire consequences for the entire world. And I think we really need to do everything possible to prevent the use of military action against Iran, and a lot more can still be done. And we haven't done it all yet.
You know, it's sort of interesting. Israel obviously attacked a Syrian reactor, or the development stage of a Syrian reactor. I don't know exactly how far along it was, and that was covered almost not at all and led to very few sanctions in the world. So Israel's certainly willing to do this again. What I've heard about Iran is that it's much more complicated than a simple military attack. Israel might not even be able to pull it off. They couldn't pull it off without American help. Is that true?
I think you touched upon a very important point. Israel has proven its capability and its willpower.
Right.
In two different instances, 1981, the bombing against the Osirak reactor, and 2007, the bombing against the Syrian reactor, which was 2 to 3 weeks away from becoming operational. Had it become operational, would have been capable of producing fissionable material for 2 nuclear weapons a year. So Israel denied them of that capability, viewing it as this existential threat as it saw it. Iran is a completely different scenario. Iran has all its facilities scattered throughout the country, and it's a huge country. Iraq and Syria, both in those cases, it was one facility above ground, and it was a very clear and easy target. Iran, Natanz, for example, which we mentioned before, is a hardened facility. It's built dozens of meters underground, under concrete, under steel, and under dirt. You'd have to have the bunker buster capability to be able to penetrate it and to cause the destruction required to prevent them from being able to continue to enrich uranium. The other facilities, which are the key components of the program, Arak is a heavy water facility, one day could refine plutonium. They're still a few years away, but that's above ground. Bushehr, the nuclear reactor, not really a threat to Israel, but I would assume that in a strike against their nuclear facilities, Bushehr would also be bombed. That's above ground. Isfahan is the conversion plant. That's mostly above ground. Some of it's also underground. Natanz is the main problem. And the main difficulty is just, first of all, getting there. How do you fly your fighter jets over 1,000 miles away from Israel? Some of them would require mid-air refueling. Even once you get there, how do you overcome Iranian air defense systems? How do you overcome Iran's air force? It's a very complicated operation. My understanding, and this is just Yaakov Katz speaking, is that Israel definitely has a very viable military option, if not to obliterate Iran's program, which I think only the U.S. could successfully do. It could be enough to set them back by a year, two, or three. But even in that scenario, Israel, you would need some sort of diplomatic initiative to follow up such a strike to prevent them from rebuilding it, and you require coordination with the United States to make sure that that happens.
I want to thank Yaakov Katz for a fascinating visit on Too Jewish. We would like to talk to you again sometime.
It'd be my pleasure.
And continued success. Looking forward to seeing your book.
Thank you very much.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
Whether a hurricane that renders thousands homeless or the death of a child, disasters great and small challenge the faith of the most devout and fuel the arguments of the bitterest cynic. No one has spoken to the challenge of maintaining faith, purpose, and meaning better than Rabbi Harold Kushner, author of the best-selling book on the problem of evil, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. Temple Emmanuel is proud to invite everyone to hear Rabbi Kushner in a special program on Wednesday, December 15th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available at Temple Emmanuel by calling 327-4501. One of the most popular and important speakers in the world today, Rabbi Harold Kushner speaks to the heart of what it means to be human and how we can overcome adversity to flourish in all circumstances. Rabbi Kushner's new book, Conquering Fear, Living Boldly in an Uncertain World, has received rave reviews. For those who wish to become sponsors of this important event, there's a dinner before his talk by reservation only. Hear world-famous speaker and writer, Rabbi Harold Kushner, author of the book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road, on Wednesday night, December 15th at 7:30 p.m. Call 327-4501 for tickets or for more information.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community.
Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Robert Putnam, author of the fascinating book American Grace, Exploring and Analyzing Religion in America. Don't miss it. Our playout on this post-Hanukkah morning comes from the reggae singer Matis Yahu. Our final Hanukkah cut of the year will be his new miracle song. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Just living in a miracle, candles in my vehicle, 8 nights, gonna shine invincible, no longer be divisible, born through the struggle, keep on moving through all this hustle, head up, head down through all of the bustle, New York City, wanna flex your muscle, look so down, look so puzzled, huddle around your fire through all the rubble, bound to stumble and fall, but my strength comes not from man at all, bound to stumble and fall, but my strength comes not from man at all.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.